Hi, it's Rabbi Jim Egolf. Shavuot Tov. Thank you so much for joining me this week. We're going to take a look at an archived sermon for Vayera and try to delve into this issue of Pharaoh hardening his heart. Again, thank you for joining me, and I wish you a Shavuot Tov, a wonderful week. Shalom. Shalom. Understanding the Exodus and the events leading up to the Exodus are difficult at best. As a rabbi, I wonder if we often take the Exodus too much for granted. I also wonder if that notion of taking the Exodus for granted was one of the fears or problems in our Torah portion. When Moses goes to Pharaoh and demands, "Let my people go," the Egyptian king all but mocks this ex-shepherd from Midian. Why should the most powerful ruler take anyone seriously when it is this monarch who claims to be one of the gods of his religions? Why should such a man listen to Moses? It's not widely accepted today, but at that time, it was generally taken for granted that the rule of the Egyptian king was as close as any one human could get to being a god and controlling humanity. Yet taking the world as we understand it for granted is exactly how the Exodus began to unfold. The fact that Moses spoke to this power in such a way and with faith that, while wavering privately, never did so publicly, was one of the greatest strengths Moses possessed. Yet this notion of taking things for granted manifests itself in other ways in the Torah. We, for example, take it for granted that we have free will. In fact, one of the most disturbing passages to humans is when God seems to take this free will from the Pharaoh and replaces it with the hardened heart. We take it for granted that we can make decisions and are led to believe that little to nothing can get in the way of our will. Yet, what we find in this Torah portion is that it is not God, but Pharaoh, who initially is doing the hardening of the heart. In Exodus, it reads chapter 7, verses 13 and 14 out of the Judaic Press books of the Bible. But Pharaoh's heart remained steadfast, and he did not hearken to them, as the Lord had spoken. And the Lord said to Moses, "Pharaoh's heart is heavy. He has refused to let the people out." Heavy is another word, by the way, for hardened. So it was not God doing any hardening at this point. In fact, in next week's parsha, it is abundantly clear who is doing the hardening of the heart. This week, however, it is only Pharaoh who is engaged in this activity. One way I read this hardening of the heart is that it is really taking things for granted. Pharaoh is so convinced of his own importance that he is not about to allow it to be questioned. His vision of the world is that Moses and this God of the Israelites is just an exception, something he is allowing to exist, and he really thinks he could stop it at any moment. This changes next week, but at this point in the story, Pharaoh takes his own position for granted, and the battle that will ensue will be the destruction of that notion, as he must appreciate this Moses and his God. Do we contend with people taking things for granted today? It seems that part of the problem we face as Americans is that all too often we take our world and our place in the world for granted. We forget that our country was not always the amazing place of wealth and ability that has made it the envy of the world. In fact, prior to World War II, we were a power, but not the power. We have a hard time believing that, until recent history, the world did not often pay attention when our leaders made public statements about the world and who we don't like. Now, we are not sure whether or not people still care, but one thing is for certain. We inherited much from the World War II generation. And, all too often, we have taken it for granted. And now I wonder whether or not we understand what it would take to accomplish what occurred during that generation. Taking things for granted gets ugly at times and is reflected in how some see our country. Recently, there was an episode of this in one of our nation's capitals. I'm not sure how or why, but the following was reported in the news this past week. Austin, Texas, from the Associated Press. Hours after Governor Rick Perry kicked off his second full term in office, Ted Nugent helped him celebrate in a black tie gala, but not all attendees were pleased with the rocker's performance. Using machine guns as props, Nugent, 58, appeared on stage as the final act of the inaugural ball, wearing a cutoff t-shirt emblazoned with the Confederate flag and shouting offensive remarks about non-English speakers, according to people who were in attendance. Perry's spokesman, Robert Black, said, "Ted Nugent is a good friend of the governor's. He asked him if he would play at the inaugural ball. He didn't put any stipulation on what he would play." Nugent, a hunting and gun rights advocate, couldn't be reached for comment Thursday because he was hunting, a spokeswoman said. It is unfortunate in the only state in the Union that still has the right to form its own country if it wants to. Bet you didn't know that. Is one where Mr. Nugent, Governor Perry's friend, takes for granted that all the people who live in our country speak English. And, as far as I can tell, aspire for the days of the Confederacy. Can you imagine if a lawmaker invited some other musician to entertain, let's say, in our part of the country, and this individual entered wearing a shirt that sported a swastika? There is a hardening of the heart that occurs in our country all the time. Though this one was particularly offensive, it wasn't enough to wear the battle flag of the Confederacy, but lest anyone doubt Mr. Nugent's ideals, he made sure there was no lack of clarity by the end of his performance. Now, having actually lived in Texas, there is a certain amount of hubris among the inhabitants of the Lone Star State. For example, if you have moved to Texas and are not a native, but someone inquires about where you are from, the correct response is, "I am from," fill in the blank, naming your state, "but I got to Texas as soon as I could." That is the standard, and might I mention, safe response to the question. It also speaks to the fact that many Texans take for granted that they live in the best state, in the best country. Our president is also from this state, but there are some issues regarding something that could become shall we say, a future storage problem for President Bush. The plan is or was, now that the whole issue is under scrutiny, where Mr. Bush's library will be once he leaves office. He and the leadership of the Southern Methodist University took it for granted that having the Bush Presidential Library would be a good thing for the Southern Methodist University campus. However, a group of Methodist ministers thinks this differently. This is again reported from the AP, Dallas, Texas. A group of ministers, Methodists that is, from across the nation launched an online petition drive Thursday urging Southern Methodist University to stop trying to land George W. Bush's presidential library. The petition on a newly created website, http://www.protectsmu.org, says that as United Methodists, we believe that the linkage of his presidency with a university bearing the Methodist name is utterly inappropriate. Methodists have a long history of a social conscience, so questions about the conduct of this president are very concerning, says one of the petition's organizers, the Reverend Andrew J. Weaver of New York, who graduated from SMU's Perkins School of Theology. SMU emerged as the apparent winner in the library competition last month when the site's selection committee said it was entering into further discussions with just SMU, the 11,000-student private university, which is First Lady Laura Bush's alma mater. The Bushes are Methodists. There is some talk that the library we'll move to Baylor, but this raises an issue that many probably thought wouldn't exist. The notion that a university would be pressured not to take a presidential library is probably unheard of. It seems that many of the administration of SMU took it for granted that this collection, including the pet goat and the very hungry caterpillar, would be a universal positive. However, articles and comments such as the George W. Bush Library asset or albatross for SMU, Methodism, torture in the presidential library, or the last one, W. Library in record book, $5 million center would be priciest for a president who knew Halliburton was going to build the darn library to begin with. There is more here than just the issue of a presidential library. Many feel that the library is very much tied to moral misgivings about many of the actions seen during this presidency. It is almost a given that having such a resource would be a positive thing, but a religious university that prides itself on a moral an ethical tradition that runs counter to the religious teachings in Methodism now calls this legacy into question. Will this library go to SMU in Dallas? Who knows? But one thing is for certain. These Methodist leaders won't allow their beliefs and morals to be taken for granted regarding this decision. Now for my own moment of taking things for granted. One of my favorite political satirists is Al Franken. Harkening back to the Al Franken gold medallion that he was selling on Friday Night Live during the 1970s, I find him entertaining, though often going over the edge. In 1999, he published a book entitled Why Not Me?, which was his fictional account of his run for the presidency in 2000. At this time, I took it for granted that this was just amusing and a good idea for a book. In fact, in the intro to the book, he stated that he was not intending to seek public office. apparently the joke was and is on me this week, as it was reported again by the AP. Comedian Al Franken has reached out to Democratic lawmakers from Minnesota in recent days, seeking advice on a possible Senate run against Republican Senator Norm Coleman next year. One in particular, Franklin relayed, "It is unknown how people will respond to a comedian running for the Senate. I need to figure out a way to let people know I'm extremely serious about Minnesotans and their lives." Representative Colin Peterson, the chairman of the House Agricultural Committee, said that when he picked up the phone, the first thing Franken said was, "I need you to explain countercyclical payments to me." I'm not sure how to take this report, except that to say that C-SPAN really needs to get behind Mr. Franken so that the ratings might go up. At some level, we can't understand how Pharaoh could not realize the god or prophet he faced. Our danger, by the way, is that we could also take the Exodus or its blessings for granted. That is why we are all commanded to see ourselves as if we had gone forth from Egypt. It is a blunt reminder that when we take God's blessings for granted and refuse to acknowledge that we and our children would still be slaves if it had not been for God's actions, we become as hardened of heart as Pharaoh. Shavuot Tov. Music you hear on this podcast can be ordered either by a download 24/7 or CD from the good folks at magnatune.com.